Cord that I was on time today.
We'll know. Due to the coronavirus and the need for social distancing, this meeting will be held remotely and available to the public in a live feed. To access the meeting, well, we don't need that point. Adequate notice of this meeting, as required by Chapter 231, PL 1975, has been provided by a public notice on January 6, 2020, which was posted on the bulletin board at the Roosevelt Post Office, on the bulletin board in the Roosevelt Post Office, and in the Barrel Hall. The notice was published in the Times and the Asbury Park Press. Roll call.
Mr. Bowen?
Here.
Mr. Dermody?
Here.
Mr. Essikoff?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Here.
Mr. Trammell?
Here.
Mr. Vroman?
Here.
Mayor Malkin?
Here. Okay. Okay, I'd like to say at the beginning of this meeting that just like the meeting, the last meeting in July, we'd like to try to keep this as short as possible. It's still summer, and we were all hoping that we wouldn't have to have this meeting, but you know, due to circumstances with the budget, we do. So there are a few things that if we could either keep it really short or table until the September 14th meeting, that would be appreciated. So come to public comment, agenda items only. We open that at 7.02 p.m. Is there anyone from the public who has anything they'd like to say solely about the agenda items? And being none, we close the...
I don't see anybody raise their hand.
No.
Okay.
We close that at 7.02. Correspondence. We have a resignation letter effective or dated July 28, 2020 from Kim Chofo, resigning as Planning Board Secretary effective September 1st, 2020. We also have a letter dated August 13, 2020 from Congressman Chris Smith to the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities regarding the JCP&L response to Tropical Storm Isaias. Basically, the gist of the letter was apparently Congressman Smith received a lot of complaints concerning JCP&L's response to the storm, and he wrote to them, and they wrote him back that they will be investigating JCP&L's response to the storm. We also have a letter.
I think the letter was out of order. I think JCP&L did the best they could. This was a nasty storm. If you look at Roosevelt as a microcosm of what really happened in Monmouth County or in his district, whatever the hell it is. You know, if everybody had that many problems, that many trees go down on a per acre basis, you know, we had a pretty bad, it's a pretty bad storm.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mother Nature has ultimate control, and it was a really bad storm.
That's right. It was a bad storm, and I think that they did as good a job as they could, and they called in a lot of help, and they came and they helped them. And
I did want to say for the public record that I think they did not a very good job. They miscommunicated. They told us the power would be restored in 24 hours, and it was several days later after we communicated to some people that we heard directly from them that power would be restored within 24 hours. Their procedure about going to the community where they're the most customers first and connecting them so that their numbers look good so they can say, well, we were only 2 days in and we restored power to 85% of the customers. Really, there's a problem because with small communities with not too many people who might be a rural community, I think they suffer the most when they're last to be connected. To be reconnected. I know in Roosevelt, and we're kind of a rural community, they didn't get around to us till four days later, I think.
We were out for 5 days.
5 days later, and we were struggling, and a lot of our residents were struggling because, unlike in some of the rich communities, they don't all have generators that kick on automatically. So they lost a lot of food from the lack of refrigeration. And they, you know, they went without power for a long time, and they don't have the same resources that some of the richer communities that have more people in it have. And so I think it's a problem when they just go and try to connect to most people first, because I think some of the smaller communities suffer in that kind of process. So I think that's something that they should look at and address. And it might be a different lens that they can look at things through.
So I had addressed that with our former liaison to JCP&L, Jerry McCarty, many years ago. And I told him that I thought that JCP&L might not be aware of how many elderly people we have in Roosevelt, or as I phrased it then, not just elderly, but a lot of ancient people.
Speak for yourself.
I think she is.
Near 100 years old. And that, you know, we had Solar Village, and that we were always the last to be connected. And Jerry, I was shocked because he really went to bat for us. And so for years, we were getting hooked, you know, powered back up much sooner than a lot of other towns. But I guess, you know, this storm, whatever, I'm not sure. I was annoyed only because they kept saying, by 11 tomorrow night, by 11 tomorrow night, by 11 tomorrow night. And
see, I was not aware of that. I wasn't aware that they were misinforming.
Yeah, and we had trouble, as everyone knows, I think, that with our municipal generators going for a long period of time, just on pure generator power, trying to supply basic resources and services to our residents. And we really struggled to keep all the generators running. They continually broke down. It's a problem with small communities. And so I think I applaud Congressman Smith for looking into this with the BPU. And I think there's some other issues that could be addressed too, as far as storm response. And I agree, it was a really difficult storm. And I don't think that they really anticipated it to have quite the impact that this one had.
It wasn't predicted at all.
No.
Okay, well.
I'll agree with all of you. I agree with Lou. They did the best they could with the situation at hand. And I do agree that they should not have stated that by 11 o'clock tonight or by 11 o'clock tonight. So a little better communications, but it was a pretty severe storm. Millions of people were out of electricity.
I thought it was unusual that that it kept having Roosevelt at the top of the list, and it's going to be done the following day, where they were telling all the other towns they weren't going to be done until, you know, the following Tuesday. So I thought that maybe that our advocate with the power company was actually pushing us towards the front. That was the impression that I got.
I did too.
Well, I think we did get on sooner than some and later than others. But we did have communication, Joe. I was in touch with Jim Markey every day. So he was staying in communication. He was just incorrect about when we would get.
That's what I'm saying. They should not have stated that by 11 o'clock tonight or by 11 o'clock tonight. That happened twice, I believe. So, you know, there could have been better communication than that.
So next we come to a letter dated August 10th, 2020 from Mary Tullis regarding School Lane. Mary had some questions about curb cuts or such about, you know, when School Lane is having its paving done. So I think that we need to discuss that tonight since Mary's not online now, and also School Lane isn't scheduled to be paved until, I believe, 2022. So we can hold her letter off for a while. She has some questions about that. Come to approval of minutes. I have our closed meeting minutes of June 22nd, 2020. Do I have a motion to approve?
Yes, you do.
And a second?
I'll second. Joe seconds.
Roll call.
Mr. Bowen?
Yes.
Mr. Germany?
Yes.
Mr. Esikoff?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Mr. Roman?
Was I at that meeting?
I don't think you were.
Yeah, I don't think I was either.
Actually, Luke and Chad were. They were not at that meeting.
Abstain.
Yeah. And then I'm also abstaining.
So we change Mr. Germany's vote to abstain and Mr. Vroman abstain. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, now we have regular meeting minutes of July 27th, 2020. Do I have a motion?
Yes.
And a second?
I'll second.
Roll call.
Mr. Bowen?
Yes.
Mr. Germany, you were there.
Yes.
Remember that meeting?
Mr. Esikoff?
Yes, I was there.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes, I was there too.
Yeah, and Mr. Trammell?
I was there on my telephone, yes.
And Mr. Vroman, you were not.
I was not. Yeah, abstain.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Public hearing and second reading of Ordinance 20-10. Calendar year 2020 ordinance to exceed the municipal budget appropriation limits and establish a cap bank. NJSA 40A, (4-45, period 14). This ordinance authorizes an increase to 3.5% over the previous year's final appropriations. Do I have a...
No, first you're going to open
the public hearing. Wait, I'm sorry. I open the public hearing at 7:12 p.m. Does anyone from the public have anything they'd like to say about this ordinance? Any comments? And I will close the public hearing at 7:12 p.m.
Okay.
Okay.
Motion.
Do I have a motion to approve?
Yes.
I'll second. And just for the public record, I wanted to add that this is something that we do every year. It merely allows for a little more headroom should you have an emergency situation where you ordinarily would exceed the budgetary amount that we're allowed by the state. So we just do it just in case we need to exceed by that amount.
It gives you the ability to appropriate more, but it does not, so the rest of the council know, it does not create a pool of money. Okay.
Right.
Okay. So just be careful. It's for future use. And you're right. And like I always tell clients, you do it because you don't know when hyperinflation is going to come back. Okay. And for all we know, it could. So we're prepared. It'll soften the blow.
Yeah. Thanks, Jerry.
There you go. Roll call.
Mr. Bowen?
Yes.
Mr. Germany?
Yes.
Mr. Esikoff?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
And Mr. Vroman?
Yes.
Okay. Resolution 20-80, resolution to be read by title only. Other motion? It's to read the budget.
Yeah, I think I forgot a word.
That's okay. It's to read the 2020 budget.
I'll move 20-80.
Second?
Yes.
Roll call.
Mr. Bowen?
Yes.
Mr. Germany?
Yes.
Mr. Esikoff?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Mr. Vroman?
Yes.
Here comes Resolution 20-79, adoption of the 2020 municipal budget. And I think everyone's aware that it's late this year because of the coronavirus and the state budget and just everything this year is delayed, on a delay. So I will open the public hearing at 7:15 p.m. Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on Resolution 20-79, our 2020 budget?
Motion to approve.
I will close the public hearing at 7:15 p.m. Not hearing anything from the public.
Make sure that's in the record that
no one from the public
any comments or questions. Make it abundantly clear in the minutes.
Okay.
Mayor, I'd like to make a motion to adopt 2080, the 2020 municipal budget.
2079.
I'm sorry. 2079. That's right, 2079.
I'll second that.
Roll call.
Mr. Bowie?
Yes.
Mr. Germany?
Yes.
Lou? I'm sorry, he might have said yes. Mr. Essipal?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Trammell?
Yes, with a comment. Apparently, this is the first year in many years that the water sewer budget has had a surplus.
Has what? Oh, has a surplus? Is that what you said, Joe?
A surplus.
And Mr. Roman?
Yes.
Okay.
2079, our 2020 municipal budget passes. Come to resolution 20-81, a resolution authorizing self-examination of the 2020 budget.
Mayor, I'll offer 2081.
I'll second.
Yeah. Roll call.
Mr. Bowen?
Yes.
Mr. Dermody?
Yes.
Mr. Essipal?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Trammell?
Yes.
And Mr. Roman?
Yes.
Okay. Comes resolution 20-82, payment of vouchers for August 24th, 2020.
On a question, is that usually titled payment of bills?
You know, it must be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just written differently this time. It's the payer paying the bills.
What did I do?
You put vouchers.
That's okay. I just want to make sure it's the same.
Yeah.
Well, they're actually claims, synonymous with bills.
Yeah. I'll make that motion to pay the bills.
I'll second.
Roll call. Well, I should say any discussion? Roll call.
Mr. Bowen?
Yes.
Mr. Germany?
Yes.
Mr. Essipal?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
And Mr. Roman?
Yes.
282 passes.
I've been prepared.
Resolution 2083, resolution for renewal of membership in the Monmouth Municipal Joint Insurance Fund. So, as I'm sure all of you know, that's JIP, our insurance company for Roosevelt.
I'll make motion to renew our JIP. Contract, is it a contract?
Right, for 3 years. It ends this year, so it's for 2021.
Okay.
They just sent
I'll
it. So that was Mr. Hamilton was first and Mr. Trammell was second.
Correct.
Yes.
Mr. Bowen?
Yes.
Mr. Germany?
Yes.
Mr. Essipal?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Mr. Roman?
Yes.
All right, 2083 passes. Resolution 20-84, resolution establishing a lien against Block 3, Lot 14, 9 Pine Drive, the estate of Kim Dexheimer. So,
on a question, that's $120, I guess.
Well, let's do the motion and the second, and then we can discuss it.
I'll go for it.
Second?
I'll second that.
Now, any questions or comments?
Yeah, I think that's $120 to mow his lawn or something.
Correct.
Okay.
Roll call.
Mr. Bowen?
Yes.
Mr. Germany?
Yes.
Mr. Essipal?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Mr. Roman?
Yes.
Okay. 84 passes. Resolution 20-85, resolution augmenting the borough's contract for professional engineering services with Tank Industry Consultants for materials analysis not to exceed $1,200. Do I have a motion?
I'll move that.
Second?
Second.
Discussion?
On a quick explanation, AT&T wanted to change materials for restructuring the water tower. The engineering firm decided that that was not necessary, and it might even be detrimental to the tower. So it's a good thing we checked it out.
Thank you, Joe. Roll call.
Mr. Bowen?
Yes.
Mr.
Kennedy? Yes.
Mr. Asikoff?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Mel?
Yes.
And Mr. Roman?
Yes.
2085 passes. 2086. This is long. Resolution ratifying and awarding contract to Pumping Services Incorporated to connect the flow meters in the borough's water treatment plant to the water operator's emergency pump watch system.
I'll move that.
I'll second it.
Discussion?
On a quick explanation there, the water plant operator, John Holden, has a computer, the handheld device, where he can monitor all the stuff going on at the water plant. Now the water coming out of the well and the water going out of the plant for the tower can also be monitored. It's a good thing.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Roll call.
Mr. Bowen?
Yes.
Mr. Germany?
Yes.
Mr. Asikoff?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Mr. Brahman?
Yes.
Okay, 2086 passes. Reports of committee chairs, I would ask, if possible, if you have a report, keep it short.
Mr. Hamilton, I did email your report out to the council.
Okay, and I hope it was with the correction that I had it in there that the two finance committee reports were from 2018, not 2020.
I did correct.
From 2020, not 2018.
Yeah, so thank you for that. So that's part of the public record if you want to read it. Fine, this way we don't have to discuss it, but I did want to say, if I might, And I know that Joe mentioned it, for the first time in many, many years, we've generated a small surplus in our utility accounts of $30,000. And I think that's due to good management. And there's a lot of cost savings associated with that by having contracted out with two separate management companies, not borough employees. And they're doing a great job. They're doing in-house testing, and we anticipate further savings as we move down the line. I also wanted to say that the budget, there was a lot of work that went into the budget. We had a couple committee meetings, and I tried to summarize them in the report that council should have. But the result, and I think after a lot of discussion with our professionals, Jerry and George, and also the committee members, that there will be no increase in the municipal tax rate. That's reflected in the budget. There'll be no increase in the utility rate. So that's always good news. That's what people want to know. Are my taxes going to go up? There will be a slight increase in the school tax rate from 1.985 to 2.019. The net effect is that the average residential property tax may rise slightly from about $92 a year for the average homeowners. I just wanted to add one other thing for the record here. Municipal taxes comprise, according to the numbers that we received, less than 25% of the overall property taxes. Actually, it turned out to be 24.55% of property taxes. School taxes comprise 65.67% of property taxes. And that's the same in a lot of municipalities. But I just wanted to note that oftentimes people come to the municipal government complaining about any tax increases, and they don't realize that the borough is really the collection agent for various taxes, for all the taxes that comprise property taxes, but our portion of it is actually less than a quarter, and that's all we have control over. And most of the taxes are a result of school property taxes. So I just wanted to add that to the record.
Thanks, Mike. Did George or Jerry want to add anything?
Actually, with the water sewer, we actually generated $44,000, which we're using 30 of it to offset this year's budget. We were able to substantially reduce expenses, and at the end of the year, recall, we did a resolution actually canceling $80,000. So for the first time, in a while, we were able to actually generate something where, and we didn't have to depend on any money coming from the current fund. So that, I think that was very good news. And
I think that's really admirable. I mean, that's the first time in a, weren't we running for many, many, many years in the red, right? We
were. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not to say that there won't be increases possibly down the road. I mean, as we look at our capital projects and things, but I think we're in pretty good. We're in the best shape we've been in a long time. So,
and we have good water and good sewer too.
Yeah, I was going to say, and we actually have clean, drinkable, wonderful water, which I've been told by many residents actually take. People think it tastes good. So, that's really saying something for Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. All right. So we'll go. Put it back into order. Council Member Bowen?
Oh, okay. One thing I'd like to bring up has to do with the trees that fell during the storm. I'd like to at least get it out there what the policy is regarding trees that fall on the road, and who's responsible for cleaning it up. Now, when the storm first happened, you know, as chair of public works, I sort of made that my duty, you know, to facilitate the clearing of the road. Okay, so Greg and I were out there making the roads at least passable to where there was one lane clear to where people could get in and out. Okay. Now, a number of these trees landed on wires, so nothing could really be done until PSE. And G, why? So once the wires were fixed, we still had a few trees that were blocking half of the road. Okay, so that was number one priority on my list to get that cleared off. Now, I did what I thought was in order. I contacted Peggy and I said, well, what is the policy? Like, who's, you know, is Alan going to come and do this or what? Who's going to be cleaning up these trees? Well, the message I got from Peggy was that the homeowner is responsible. Now, that didn't sit right with me, basically because, you know, what are we going to wait until the homeowner gets around to clearing the road by, you know, spending their own money and finding a tree company to come out and clear the road? It just didn't seem right to me. You know, just like if a tree lands on your property, you know, you have to, it's your responsibility if it falls from your neighbor. Well, in the same line of thought, I mean, if a tree falls in the road, which is our responsibility, I'm under the impression that we're responsible for taking down.
I'm not sure how that got miscommunicated, but yes, if the tree falls on someone's property, they're responsible for removing it. But if it falls in the road, then it's just our responsibility to push
it. Well, you know, I'm glad that you're on board now, but if you recall, remember when Neil Marco called the office to report about the same thing? Him and I were both going after the same thing. So when he brought that up, I was kind of glad. And we had a nice text message issue regarding this. And that's when you were entertaining the idea of you know, putting liens against people's property in order to pay for, you know, the removal of the tree.
I didn't say that. I never said that.
I'll show you the email or the text thing, and it was clear because I said right off the get-go, when the issue about what Neil Marco brought up, right from the get-go, I said, since it has been decided by you, Peggy, and you actually referenced Greg Cannon on this, was that the homeowner has to pay.
Right, if it falls on their property.
But I'm not talking about their property. I'm talking about the road. The whole time I've been talking about the road, and you keep confusing it with the property. Now, the way I think it should have happened was as soon as the PSE&G cleared the wires, then we got to get in there and get the tree off of the road right away. I mean, so 5 days after the storm, we should have been working on getting somebody in there to get those trees off the road.
What?
It was August. What?
8 different tree companies. 8. And every single tree company either couldn't come or didn't return our calls. We had, Anna can give you a list of all 8 tree companies. We worked on this from day one. We called.
Peggy, on August 13th, okay? August 13th is when Neil Marco brought up about this same issue. And it was on August 13th that when we start kicking around all these ideas about how to pay for it, and when we finally came up with an idea from Anna brought it up about getting the county to come in and clip. So as of August 13th, the only thing that was in place for taking care of those trees was waiting on the county. And they were supposed to come last week, okay?
We couldn't get a tree company to come out here. That's why Anna finally thought of the county. Because we called 8 different companies, from Allen, who has always done our work, and Timberwolf, and 6 others, and either they didn't return the phone call or they said they were too busy. So we were constantly working on getting tree companies here. They just didn't respond or said no to us. And that's when Anna came up with, let's ask the county, because we called.
Peggy, I'm going by what you told me. You told me the homeowner is responsible for removing that tree off the road, okay? There was no confusion about what we were talking about. We're not talking about people's property because I'm only concerned about the road.
Well, then I misunderstood you.
Well, you did. And even after that, when Neil Marco brought up the same issue, you still weren't on board with hiring somebody and getting those damn trees out of there.
No, I have to disagree with you, Steve. We were calling every tree
company. Read you the text if you want.
We were calling every tree company to clear the roads. I thought you were focusing on their property. As far as the roads, we were calling from the day after the storm tree companies to see if they could come and clear the road.
Well, I totally disagree. I've been following this because it's been my number one duty. And I've been hounding on this, and I'm glad to see that you're on board now, but you weren't all along. I mean, maybe you inadvertently sent me down the totally wrong trail, saying that the homeowner is responsible, and I'm so glad I didn't tell anybody that.
I mean, the homeowner is responsible when a tree falls on their
property. I'm not talking about their property. I'm talking about the road. All along I've been talking about the road.
All I can tell you is I can show you all the phone calls from the very beginning when we called every tree company to come and clear the roads. So I very well may have misunderstood what you meant, but we were never asking homeowners to pay for clearing trees in the road.
What the end of the conversation regarding what Neil Marco brought up was that we were going to go with the county to try to do it, because if you go back and look at those texts, you'll see that the aim was to try to get the resident to pay for it.
The road, because what resident do you choose to pay for a tree in the road? How do you even choose what resident?
Can I ask a question regarding this?
Mike, you were in on that text message as well, and you kept silent. That whole message, maybe you weren't aware of it, but But you kept silent through the whole thing. It was me and you and Peggy and Anna. Discussing this whole thing.
Well, I didn't understand who was responsible. So I was waiting for some sort of...
So that's what I want to make clear, because there is no policy. There is no protocol. It's just a crazy kind of winging it that I'm not really comfortable with. So if we can get something formal to where if there's a storm and a tree falls in the road, that we are responsible and we get it out of there as quickly as possible.
Well,
but I think we should actually have a tree service lined up to come to
that. Because we couldn't get it out as quickly as possible. We were calling every tree company and getting denied.
And the calling didn't start for a while, Peggy. It didn't start for a while.
You know, I can check on that, Steve. That's all I can tell you. I can check on that because I know we called.
I had a question if I could jump in, because I need clarification on something too. If a tree is on a homeowner's property and it's blown down in a storm and it blocks the roadway, it's our responsibility, as I understand it, to keep the roadway clear. But whose responsibility is it to remove the rest of that tree? Is it the homeowner's responsibility? Or the town's responsibility? And how does the homeowner supposed to handle that?
Let me jump in just for a second here, guys. The way I see it, if a tree falls on a wire, JCP&L gets called first. They make sure that the wire is dead. They will bring their own tree people in to clear the tree around the wire and repair the wire. Beyond that, if the tree falls from somebody's front lawn onto the roadway, Steve is right. It is our responsibility to clear the roadway as soon as possible, even if it's one lane, which you guys did a great job of. Beyond that, we have to get the rest of the tree out of the roadway, but the tree trunk and the tree roots are on somebody's property. That becomes their responsibility.
That makes perfect sense.
Okay.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Listen, I had the two storms we had, I had very large branches fall in my backyard, and they were from the Green Acres, because I have a bunch, we have a separation from Green Acres. And I paid somebody to come and move those branches away. Because they fell on my property. And I think that's what Mr. Bowen is saying is absolutely correct. And Mr. Hamilton, and also Joe Trammell. If a tree is on your property and it falls forward onto the road, up to the curb is the property of the boroughs.
That's right.
After that, it belongs to the owner.
Because
it then becomes, then it's on their property and they're responsible.
Right.
I did want to also respond to something that you said, Steve, that I think is really important, that I think we need written policy.
Absolutely.
On this and a lot of issues. And I think we've been neglectful in not having clear policy, because we don't want to be making decisions by group texts and going here and there,
Emergency communication is terrible.
Especially in an emergency. We want to be able to look at the policy manual and say, this is the way that it has to be done. We have a protocol for that. Let's do it that way. I think it would be helpful if we put these things in policy.
Yeah, because we had gotten clarification from Greg Cannon that if it falls on, as unfair as it seems, if a tree falls on your property, no matter where it fell from, you're responsible for dealing with it.
That's correct.
The roadway, I also did think was clear that the borough would take care of it, but we can actually put that in writing as part of our policy.
But you don't take care of it, like you said, you want to clear the road, so you move it out of the way. I don't know, do you put it on the residents' property since it was their tree? I mean, maybe Andrew knows, or do you remove from...
Any tree company would remove the tree from the roadway.
And they'll take
it's a right of way, and it's the public or the municipality's obligation to remove. They're not going to place it back onto the homeowners. I mean, they could, potentially. But if a tree falls from one neighbor to the other, the neighbor that has the tree fall in their yard is responsible for taking away that tree.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Who's speaking? Who was just speaking?
That was Andrew.
Andrew, how you doing, Andrew?
What's up, John? How you doing?
I mean, I thought that was clear about the homeowners, and then if there's an obstruction in the roadway, we have to do it. I'm so sorry, Steve, that there was a miscommunication, because we were calling tree companies, and we called Alan, who we generally used for many, many, many years. Immediately, he said no. We called Timberwolf. They said no. Then we called six others, some of whom said no. And so
when were these calls made, Peggy? Were they made the day after the wires were repaired?
I can't tell you, Steve.
Well, that's when it should happen. That's when it should happen. And I'll guarantee you, it didn't happen for a while because there was no clear direction about who was going to be removing that tree from the road.
Because we couldn't get anyone here. We were just being told no over and over by the tree companies. Now, Greg did as many as he could, Greg Defoe, as many as he could himself. But
Greg and Steve
were much too cumbersome for him to handle. So in that case, you know, we were just waiting to see which tree companies. And then finally, Anna thought of the county, who, as of even today, I think you were on the text thread, you know, the county said they would come and clear. You know, they need a staging area, so they would take everything, put it in the staging area, and then we needed to find someone who'd come and chip them. As it is, then we decided, then Timberwolf called us back and said they would do it. They'll do all the branch pickup, they'll do all the clearing. So we decided that we would go with Timberwolf rather than the county and then having a staging area. But we were discussing it and working on it every day, just trying to find a tree company to come in if Greg Defoe couldn't handle it. There was never.
All I can tell you, Peggy, is it's been a thorn in my side ever since the storm. I've been trying to get clarity about it, and you very clearly told me that the homeowner is responsible for getting that tree out of the road, you know, and that's what I was going on.
I'm sorry, Steve. I never meant the road, because I wouldn't even know if it's in the road. Well, I guess you could kind of see which house it came from, but
it was even over a week or so after the storm. I texted Anna. I said, Anna, what's going on with the trees that are in the road? And she goes, I was wondering the same thing. Okay, so this is well after the storm. Okay.
No, Anna was calling. We were every day calling tree companies. So she may have said, I don't know, meaning I don't know when it's going to get cleared because we can't get
it. All right. Well, then there are some text messages I'd like to have analyzed, because I was totally being pushed down this road of making the residents pay, and I didn't think it was right.
You've never asked a resident to pay for a tree in the road, ever.
Well, that's good, because it's wrong.
Yeah, we've never taken money from a resident to clear a tree in the road, ever.
Okay, well, I don't know why you responded to me the way that you did. Maybe you had an idea about, you know, we're not paying for trees anymore or what, but my big beef was getting the tree out of the road. I was talking about the road. I didn't care about what's in their lawn, okay? I want to get the road clear. And you kept on pushing me in the wrong direction on this.
I don't remember pushing you in any direction. I just remember thinking that we were trying to get the tree companies out here. Anna and I were talking every day, seeing we came up with so many different names of tree companies, and then they would either, as I said, not return our call or tell us, no, they're too busy. And so.
All right, whatever.
All right.
Could we sum up and kind of come up with some recommendations as to
how we can hire a tree service who will come in and do the emergency damage right after a storm? Why is that in place? I mean, that should be the protocol, right?
Every town wants the tree service to come immediately. That's the problem.
Well, you develop a relationship. That's why I thought Alan's, who we've been using, I thought that as soon as the wires got cleared off, by, you know, by the PSE&G, that Alan's would have come in and did the rest to get the roads clear, but no.
Why Alan didn't come? Do you want me to tell you? Alan doesn't want to come anymore. Alan is angry or upset because we used him exclusively, because we didn't really have much of a public works department. Now that we have a viable, active public works department, and Greg Defoe and Greg Poziel and you are able to handle a lot of the trees internally. Alan got angry that we don't need him every time. He's very angry because now we only need him for either the larger trees or, you know, not every time there's a tree issue. And he got angry at us and we asked him, is that why you're not coming? Are you upset with us because we don't use you as much? And he said, yes, absolutely. He's very angry that we have an active public works department now and he refuses to come anymore.
Mayor, can we come up with a clear public policy to address this and put it in writing and have it be part of our official borough policy?
Yeah, because the other thing is we have an OEM, right? I forget his name.
I'm the OEM and Rob is deputy OEM.
Well, what does that mean? I mean, what do you do as an OEM? Like, because there were issues about calling the fire department. I mean, is that the OEM job?
The fire department was here helping. Yes, Rob called Millstone Fire. I was on the phone from the moment the storm started. We were directing operations for how we would handle the no power, the trees down, and Millstone.
All right, so you and Rob are going back and forth about this. I mean, because I don't know anything about anything, what you did or what Rob did. I mean, I was curious as to, you know, like how the fire department got there, you know, or if you're talking to
that's the job of the...
Why isn't anybody else in the loop? You know, here we have a town emergency, and half the council is not even aware that of any of the problems. Was it just me and Joe? I mean, we're the only guys, and Mike, or whoever happens to be walking around outside?
I have to disagree with you. We were all very involved in doing everything we can from the moment the power went out.
There was no communication. There's no communication at all. Even the residents, you know, here's a tree laying in the road. They would like to know what's going on with it.
Well, we had no power in the borough hall, so it was very hard to have a center for, you know, communication center. There was no power here.
I'm talking about even after the power came back on. There's just no communication at all. There is none.
Code reds went out. The code reds went out about power. The code red went out about water. Code red went out. I mean, we sent out code reds to inform the residents of anything that we felt was crucial that they needed to know.
I think the communication all the way around is poor.
I just
communication between
all in communication with each other about the power and the trees. And
So you're saying that you don't think there's any problem, that everything was done pretty well, pretty well.
I think that we did the best we could, considering we had no power for 5 days. We had no tree company that would come out. We couldn't get anyone here, but we sent out code reds. And I personally checked on Solar Village, on different people in town that I know are frail or have issues. I mean, I think that... We did, I mean, as far as no, could we do better? Of course, you can always do better, always. But as far as no communication, I was on the phone for 14 straight hours from the storm started on a Tuesday. From Tuesday to Saturday or Sunday, I was never off the phone. I was either on the phone with Anna, I was on the phone with the county, I was on the phone with people from Solar Village, I was on the phone with JCP&L, with Jim Markey.
Could I ask if council members have any suggestions as to how we might improve communication during an emergency where everybody's scrambling and doing different jobs? How can we coordinate communication so that everybody knows what's going on at any given moment? And during an emergency, that's not easy because everybody's busy doing something. And so you're not thinking about, well, let's get out some communication to everybody telling them what's going on. Do any of the council members have any suggestions as to how we might be able
to... How about a bulletin from the mayor? I mean, it doesn't have to be a code red. I mean, just a bulletin, we're getting a generator for Solar Village, or we're working on getting the trees out of the road. I mean, just keep everybody abreast. Nobody gets any information.
sent out to council or to the community or to whom?
I don't know how to communicate with the community. I don't know.
No, were you suggesting we communicate? Is this about communication with the mayor and council and members of the our employees? Or are we talking about the broader
sphere? Both.
Okay. Both. Yeah.
Because I think there are people on the council here. Did they hear anything about what was going on during the emergency during those four or 5 days?
Let me jump in for a second here, guys. This is going to go on forever. What would be good is if OEM, Public Works, and some other folks were on. Let me say this first. When we tried to phone people during the emergency there, you might have 10 or 15 seconds worth of phone call before it dropped out. The best way that we communicated then was to text each other. We did a few group texts, and we also drove around town and saw each other on the streets. So one way to ensure communications is group text, but we need to know who to text in the OEM department, and then from there it should go out to communicate with other departments and the rest of the town.
Right, so from the ground up.
It was almost impossible to talk on the telephone during
that. Let me tell you something. If you had Fios, which is what I have, which is Verizon, as soon as the power went out, I lost my phone, both my phone, my cell phone, and my
internet,
and my computer. I lost all any communication with the public that I could not communicate with anyone.
Yep. And Greg Posiel had the same issue. He's a public works employee part time, and like our other employees for public works, and we couldn't get in touch with him. I had to go to his door a couple times to talk to him. So communications were screwed up. There's no doubt about it.
Because BIOS was gone. Fios was gone.
Internet was down. Telephone was down.
But you have to plan. Let me just say this. But you have to plan on that happening. You have to plan on everything getting screwed up during a crisis.
Even after the crisis. I mean, it's been weeks since the crisis. Do the residents have any idea of what's happening with the trees in the middle of the road? I mean, so this is weeks that nobody's heard anything.
I was just at the Borough Hall signing my vouchers, and I spoke to Anna, and she told me exactly what the mayor just said. They were trying for a long time, I don't know how long, but for a fair period of time, to get a contractor to come out, and nobody, according to Anna now, and she has no vested interest, none, except as a communicator. And she was told, and she called everybody that was possibly fine, including the county. And the county said, no, we're not coming out here. So look, we tried. Now, as Peggy just told you, now they finally, from what I understand, we finally got Timberwolf to agree to come. And he was ready to come a couple of months, you know, in a reasonable period. And she said, no, I think we're going to do it at a certain time. Now, I don't know if that's a good idea or not, or we should do it now. If we should do it now, let's do it, if he'll come now. But we finally got somebody who will consent to coming out and taking care of it. We're not going to do it right now.
She's still working on the county also. So.
Well, I think at this point we heard from the county and Timberwolf both just today and decided to go with Timberwolf rather than the county.
But the county is not reliable at this point.
Yeah. What's that?
That's the impression I had from Anna. So we have a contractor now. The case is, do we want him to come out right now or this week or next week or in the very near future to come out and clean out what's that like? Not Homestead, Valley
North
Road,
Valley,
wherever, and up in, it's up to, you know.
Eleanor.
Eleanor is fairly good. I was up Eleanor Lane a couple, yes, 2 days ago. And it was passable, very passable.
We also asked Hightstown if they could help us, and they said no.
That's right.
Exhausted every avenue of getting people here as soon as possible.
Well, listen, they all had their own grief. The contractors were busy, and anybody else had their own same problems we had.
May I make a suggestion that OEM, both Peggy and our deputy OEM, meet with Public Works, Chair of Public Works, and try to come up with a system that also includes communication, not only to members of the government and our employees, but also some mechanism with contingencies for if we have another storm like this. How are we going to get the word out to the public to tell them this is what we're doing, and so be patient. We're actually working on it. We're not neglecting it. I think that that's important, that the public needs to know, look, these are the things that we're doing, and we're addressing them in this way. And I think that if we sat down and worked out a policy on it, it might be beneficial.
Well, this may sound primitive, but this is what we did years and years ago in Roosevelt. And I actually brought this up to the DEP. You all remember when our water was poisonous, and the DEP said the code red, which was put out at the time, was not adequate enough to tell residents that the water was poisoned and don't drink it, don't bathe, don't cook with it, and that the code red was not enough and that it was going to take more because not everyone was signed up for code red. So I mentioned to the DEP that many years ago, we actually went around on a bullhorn and shouted out through the bullhorn on every street what was happening. And the DEP said that was absolutely acceptable. So if we can do that, I was thinking that we should buy a bullhorn, and we could actually go street to street with the bullhorn, letting people know.
But let's sit down and form a committee to figure this out, exactly what the steps we're going to take when the next storm hits, because I guarantee it's going to hit. I mean, we're having wacky weather all over the country. We have two hurricanes, or a hurricane and a tropical storm, coming within a couple days of each other to Louisiana. So, we're going to continue to have these storms, and we have to continue to learn as we address some of these unanticipated issues. How are we going to respond? And so I recommend that we get together and come up with a good, clear step kind of orientation policy. This is the first thing that's going to happen. This is the second thing. This is how we're going to get word out to people.
Look,
procedure.
Right, exactly. Procedure.
We just agreed that if a tree falls on our what I call our government property, which is us, the roads and so on, that's our responsibility. How we do it, then we go forward. Let's come up with some kind of a plan. That's it. Simple as that.
Yeah.
All right.
Otherwise, we're going to grind this into the ground, folks.
Maybe.
Knowing Roosevelt, it's going to fall into the cracks.
Yeah, Kathleen had a suggestion. She said maybe we need to buy a backhoe. Try to do more work ourselves. Anne and I were discussing using Timberwolf now and in the future so that if we're regular.
How about a snowplow? Doesn't that work? Why wouldn't a snowplow work?
I can't.
Because they have a brake force. So once you get a certain amount of pressure on it, it's going to just tip over. They're not designed to push heavy objects.
And it'll ruin the blade after a while, too. Yeah.
Okay.
These are things that could be discussed in committee, if we could.
But we were discussing here on in using Timberwolf so that we'll be higher in the priority list in the future when we do need them. Right now, I don't think we ever or rarely have used them, so they were, it was good that they got back to us today and said they can do it.
They've worked in town for other people.
Individual people, but not for the borough.
No, not for the borough. But now we've got, at least we know that we are what we're responsible for. Now, how we do it and how we communicate to get it done, that's another issue. But I thought that that was going to be in the tree ordinance.
As far as like storms, I think.
Yes. Can we put that in the tree ordinance?
We can ask Greg.
I think that you might want to include that as a section in the tree ordinance, in the event of a weather emergency, and debris or trees fall from private property onto the plain English. Doesn't have to be, you know, fall onto public property, i.e. the road or the trail.
That should be on that committee with the OEM also.
I'm sorry?
That should also be on that safety, the OEM committee about procedure and stuff. He is a safety guy here at town.
Yeah, that's true. But if you want it in writing and you want to memorialize it, that, I think that's the way to do it. Put it in the tree ordinance.
Okay.
Put another paragraph. You got paragraph 12, put in 13A or whatever. And then put it in there and make it clear that anything that falls on our property, on public property, is our responsibility for cleaning.
There you go.
I needed to hear on day one. And I never heard it until now.
That's what I would do. And then as far as the logistics and how you do it, then you can get together with the emergency group and our maintenance people and find out what's evaluated and that done. And then you decide either we clean it up ourselves or we'll call the Timberwolf to come and clean it. And then if you call Timberwolf when they have a storm like we had recently, you may be put on the list and you may be number 12 or 15th as a customer. You don't know. You have to just be
patient. Either they said they were too busy or they didn't even return our calls because we were so.
But now they say they will work with us.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll be put on their list. For them to come.
That's why we decided to go with Timberwolf rather than the county.
Let me throw this in here also.
People don't think that I'm just totally making this up. Okay, this was a serious issue for me, and I tried to get to the bottom of it the best that I can. And now to hear Peggy say that it never happened, that she never said it, is very disturbing to me.
Steve, I didn't say that. I said I lived.
Look, here's the text, okay, Peggy? The text was from Anna. Neil Marco just called Borough Hall to say that the roads still have large tree debris that narrows the roads and could be dangerous, okay? And then that's when I wrote, because I had already talked to you about this issue, I wrote, since it has been determined that the homeowner is responsible for this debris in the road, do they have a time limit? Wait a minute. Do they have a time limit, or do we just wait for them to complete the work? Because I'm being very sarcastic, and because I knew it was a stupid idea. And then I said, are they aware that it's their responsibility? That's what I wrote. You're in the text message, so is Mike, so is Anna. Anna writes, this is on August 13th, okay? This is 10 days after the storm. Steve, I was thinking the same thing. Okay, so obviously she hasn't been calling any tree services up until August 13th, okay? If a property owner is responsible for any tree that falls in their property, regardless, well, what are we going to do? I said, and then perhaps if it's not done within a certain time frame, that's why I start getting into trying to figure out how we can get the thing done and paid for. And then Lou apparently was in the office with Anna at that time, August 13th. No tree company's been called yet about the stuff in the road. Lou said, Luke Field said if a tree blocked the road and Public Works cleared it, it's up to the borough to remove those large trees and large branches from the road. Okay, so Lou was on board, and that was on August 13th.
I
agree with Lou. And then you just started talking about stuff on people's lawns and stuff again.
Yeah, because I really misunderstood. I never said.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. You can't believe how aggravating it is when something so clear as getting the damn trees out of the road gets turned into something else. I mean, it's been bothering me until now, okay? So now, I'm blowing off a little steam because the whole thing pissed me off. And if it's going to run like this in the future, I don't want any part of it. It needs to be fucking organized. Excuse my French.
I'm sorry, Steve. I really am. I think we were all involved, but maybe there, you know, obviously the communication was not clear enough between all of us on those threads because we were not, you know, we were not treating this lightly or not taking it, you know, not doing our part, not being active. We were all involved. I can ask Anna when she started calling tree companies. It's hard to believe that 10 days went by before she called any tree companies. So, I mean, we will try to get to the bottom of it.
Because clearly I talked to you just a few days before that.
All right. I'm going to have to jump off here soon if we're just going to keep going round and round on the same exact issue.
Yeah.
Starting off again at the beginning.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay. And let me just toss this out there. The Millstone Fire Department was here in the rain chopping the trees up on North Valley Road. They had three trucks, a brush truck, a chief's truck, and a fire truck. And all of them had chainsaws, and they went for it until you could drive through there. Thank you for the Millstone Fire Department.
Yeah, they came because we called them, and they came right away. But, what, Steve, we will look into it. We'll try to get to the bottom of it. I'm sorry you're upset. Okay, can we...
Administration,
Lou?
After that, I quit. I have nothing to say. Okay. That's it.
Okay.
I know where.
Councilmember Dermody, Community Development Code Enforcement.
He's no longer on.
We lost him.
Yeah.
Mike, did you give your report?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Councilmember Trammell, Utilities.
Let me just try to be quick about this. The generator at Borough Hall went down the week before the storm, and the Modern Power people could not fix it, so that stayed dead during the storm. During the storm, the generator at the water plant went down, and I have to thank Greg Defoe, Greg Basile, John Holden, George Vasseur, Harry Parker, and Addison for doing some extraordinary things to that after the guy from Modern Power decided that the part was not available. Greg got the part within an hour, put it on himself. They found the radiator bed. They fed the radiator water to fill the water tower until the electricity went back on. So there were some extraordinary things that these guys did out there. I want to thank Mike Maloney from Millstone Fire Department, Steve especially. He was all over the place. Both Gregs, Rob Masterson. We met on the street all the time and talked about what was going on. John Holden, and again, George Vasseur, Harry Parker, and Addison. These guys really did the job for us. So that's what I have to say.
Well, you know, the Borough Hall was incommunicado because for the same reason, the generator was out, and they had no power.
There was nothing. Anna was gone.
And we were using Verizon, and then we used Verizon, and that's what happened.
Well, I think everyone's out. Every town, all the surrounding towns.
Most people.
Well, the electricity to the water tower and AT&T and Verizon had no electricity, so this part of the cell network was down.
Right.
Okay.
And also Verizon was down. You know, it's interesting.
Verizon and AT&T are on the water tower, so we lost them. So.
Years ago, when before fiber optic came in, and they, well, I don't know what they did,
Well, they used to come in. They used to bring a generator in.
If we lost power, at least we had a telephone to communicate. Now you lose everything.
Yeah, and Millstone was out. Their cable was out. I mean, everything around here was out.
Right.
Okay, Councilmember Roman, Environmental Health and Safety.
Yeah, I have nothing additional to add.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Chad. Does anyone have any old business they'd like to bring up?
Yeah, I understand we'll have a movie night after the branches get picked up.
After what, Joe?
After the branches get picked up.
Well, there is another issue I need to bring up. this issue about the storm runoff on North Valley. All right, there was it wasn't the big storm, but there was a heavy rainfall, and the same problem started to happen again over with the storm drain on North Valley. Apparently, I think it's Sharon Walls alerted us to it. I think it was an email.
And let me jump in again here.
Because we went down there and looked at it, and it eventually subsided. Now, back when we originally dealt with this problem, I wanted to get to a solution as to if that thing gets clogged up, who's responsible? Are we responsible, or is the homeowners along that strip there responsible for that clogged drain?
Okay, let me jump in here real quickly because I saw the pictures. It was the storm drain on North Valley. It was not the old problem of the pipe in front of their houses. That's a different problem. So this was our problem. It was all the debris from the trees across North Valley clogged up the storm drain at the corner of Farm and North Valley on the Solar Village side. So that just had to be cleared out or it would slowly drain by itself, which is what happened. But all the leaves, all the chips, everything from those trees, there was about 100 foot of trees that were down there. So all of that washed into the storm drain and clogged it. So that was the problem, not the drainage from their houses. That's a different problem. So, and that would be us to sweep out that storm drain and try to keep it clear, although it would have been really hard with all the debris there. So,
all right, so okay. Now are we talking about the drain that goes on their property about 20 feet in, that drain?
That's not our problem, and that's not what the problem was. The problem
I don't know, Joe, because when she pointed out to or said where the problem was, it was pooling up in that same area, you know, that occurred, whatever it was, a year ago. Same exact area.
Right. But the pictures that I saw that she sent were the corner of North Valley and Farm. And that is our problem. And that's a drain that's on the corner there that has to be cleared, especially with all that debris. That water came all the way up onto the lawn. So it seemed like it was the lawn problem from last year, but it was not. It was the storm drain on North Valley and Farm.
Okay, so if it ever is a problem with that storm drain that's 20 feet into the property, is it our problem or is it their problem?
That's their problem.
To be clear for them.
I've spoken to just about everybody on that block, and they understand that. The storm drain on the corner of North Valley and Farm, that's on us. Okay, and the pictures that I saw showed that it was that particular storm drain.
Okay, so if it happens on their lawn, it's not our problem. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's correct.
They're all aware of that?
They're all aware of that to a person almost, I'd say. There all might right. be 9 houses there. I spoke to at least 7 of them.
Okay.
Okay, but if it's on North Valley, on that corner itself, there is a storm drain on the corner of North Valley and Farm. There's a culvert that goes up under the North Valley there. That's all us. Okay.
Yeah, I just want to add that I have a similar storm drain that runs between my house and Greg Defoe's house next door.
Exactly.
Those storm drains were put in by the developers who realized that it's kind of swampy here and we better put in some sort of drainage system between the homeowners' properties. And so it really is the homeowner's responsibility. The borough had nothing to do with it.
Yep. But if it's on North Valley proper, that goes.
Right.
There you go.
All right, thank you.
Okay. No problem. Mm-hmm. Where are we at now?
New business. So we have the planning board recommendations for ordinance number 20-07, the pod ordinance.
Yeah, they sent that to us rather late.
They sent it rather late, so I'd like to table that until the September 14th meeting.
What ordinance is that?
The pod ordinance.
Pod?
Storage pods that you put on your property.
I got you.
Yeah, we already adopted, but they had a few
recommendations. So if anyone has no objections, I'd like to hold that off till the next meeting.
Okay.
I'll move that we table until the next meeting.
Second?
Yep.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, and then we also have the New Jersey Department of Transportation Alternatives Set Aside Program. And
that was the letter from Carmella.
Yeah, that's a letter from Carmella. And also, I would recommend that we table that until the next meeting. I don't know if anyone has read it yet, read Carmella's letter.
Yeah, I've read it. And she has a couple recommendations for the alternatives program. One of them involves dealing with the amphitheater and some of the connecting walkways to the amphitheater, and possibly getting some benches installed. And that looks like an interesting grant. But she's asking for $5,000 to work on that grant. So we'll have to evaluate and see whether it's worth our while to apply for it.
We can take the next 2 weeks to decide that and discuss it at the September 14th meeting.
Do we use the amphitheater a lot?
I have an issue that I wanted to discuss, but I'm not sure where it falls in terms of the business.
Okay. Let me just jump in on the Carmella thing. She also recommends that we could do a bike lane through town or the amphitheater. Personally, I'd say we could do the amphitheater ourselves when we felt like it, but a bike lane would be good for traffic calming. So just a suggestion. But we could table this till the next go-round.
Right.
Okay. So I'll move that we table this till the next meeting.
Second. I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Mike, you wanted to?
There was an issue brought up, and it touches upon a lot of what happened with this, the communications problems that we experienced during the storm, and, you know, where it was very difficult to manage that kind of thing. One of the reasons why you won't find me involved in a lot of the text exchanges is because the texts are actually the formation of public policy in texts. I don't think that, not only do I think that that's not proper, I think it should be done in an actual meeting, and minutes should be taken of the meeting, whether it's a committee meeting or a regular borough meeting. I think the public has a right to see how the wheels of government are turning and how these decisions are being made. And so I don't feel that it's proper, and I didn't want to step in and say I don't want to have any part of it and create an issue out of it, but I don't think it's a good idea to try to come up with a public policy, which is what we were trying to do, in a text exchange between a number of elected officials. And I think that it could actually violate the Open Public Meetings Act. I think we need to be really careful with that kind of thing. Policy really should be done in a committee and put into a formal form. And that's the way that we should, that's the way that we should govern and establish public policy. That's my opinion on it. That's why you won't see me often chiming in on these things, because, you know, I don't know where they're going and where they're headed, but sometimes I think they get perilously close to establishing public policy in a private kind of way.
Removed from the road. I mean, I'm not establishing policy, just trying to figure out what are we going to do about this tree.
I understand, but I think you need to be careful, because I think we do lapse into, well, what's our policy on this? And And how are we going to do that? And then are we actually creating
a storm? I mean, there has to be a policy. I mean, the trees. Yeah,
I agree. But it has to be established formally and then put into a formal form. And it has to be done in a way where you go through a committee process or through public meetings.
But I agree. I didn't want to sound like too defensive, but some of the reason that not every person is on every text thread is because then you do violate open public records. If you're all, I mean, not if, the OPRA laws, because, not OPRA.
Public meetings.
Open public meetings. Well, thank you. I put my blank. Because
all that's fine and dandy, but there was a real emergency going on.
Things
had to be done. Things got done.
You can't include every person on every text because then you are violating the Open Public Meetings Act. And so that's why some of the texts are just Public Works and the mayor. Some of the texts are just Anna and administration, because if everyone's on it, you're violating that. So
I don't text.
Okay, let me just, so when you think that we're not all communicating with each other, we are, but in little groups, because we all can't be on the same text.
That is doomed to fail.
I think possibly if there wasn't a virus, we could have all met in the borough hall with flashlights and the, you know, because we had an imminent situation. We had an unexpected, dangerous situation. So it wasn't anything that was anticipated. It wasn't, and we had no power in here. So rather than all be in person and discuss that with the public, even if it was with flashlights, but because of the virus, we couldn't do that. So it resulted in different threads with the people that were that specific issue. So I think that everyone was aware on the council and administration of what was going on, but we weren't all on one thread, because we would be violating the Open Public Meetings Act. And so that's why we broke it up into smaller threads.
Even during an emergency, he can only have, how many council people can talk on one text?
Three.
Even during an emergency.
Yes.
The Open Public Meetings Act has exclusions for when you can, not adhere to the strict tenets of it, but this isn't one of the exclusions as far as I know, where, you know, there's a storm, and so we're establishing public policies. So you need to be really careful with that kind of thing.
So that's why.
So could we have all just sat home and waited until somebody did something, or what?
What, Jeff?
Could we all have just sat at home and waited for somebody to do something, or what? Because I understand what Steve is talking about. He was out on the streets chopping trees up.
Yeah,
Holden was with the water plant.
Also,
you know.
But what I'm saying is what we did was proper. We never had more than three people plus Anna, or three people plus someone else who was not on the count, you know, part of the governing body.
People actually went out and did things and got it.
We had these very things going. Because that's the legal way to do it.
Okay,
for the final thing, for final item for new business.
No, new business is done. Unless somebody else does anything.
Oh, I was going to do.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
That's for Mike Tickton.
Right. Okay, so we have something to read to Michael Tickton as from the pertaining to the Environmental Commission. So I'll read the letter. Dear Michael, I would like to affirm the support of the mayor and council for the Green Team initiatives and express our gratitude to the Green Team for attaining sustainable jersey bronze certification for the borough of Roosevelt. The dedication to the objectives of sustainability, including responsible environmental management and conservation and utilizing community resources, has exceeded expectations. Our community has truly benefited from the efforts to eliminate invasive species and attract pollinators by planting native pollinator-friendly species. The involvement in preserving our green spaces and maintaining our trail system has ensured that our community continues to be a desirable place to live and enjoy nature. The Borough Council and I hope that the Green Team will continue to provide guidance to the borough and residents regarding the various aspects of greener living. Sincerely, Peggy Malkin, Mayor.
Thank you.
You're here.
Thank you, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Mike, I'll get the mayor to sign it and scan it and send it to you tomorrow.
Right, that's fine. And then I'll circulate it to the people on the Environmental Commission who have to then submit it to Sustainable Jersey.
Okay.
Put that in our packet.
Okay. Andrew, do we need a closed session?
Not tonight.
Are we going to have any public comments?
If I remember, if we would have. Okay, public comment on any item. I open at 8:25 p.m.
Okay.
Michael.
Thank you. Okay, first of all, thank you very much for the taking care of that, the green team. I want to also thank you and Mike and Bob Masterson for the work that was done to help Solar Village during the emergency. This was certainly extremely important and very helpful with the generator and getting the supplies to the generator. Okay, there's several things. The Environmental Commission submitted to the council, which you should have submitted to the clerk, it should be distributed at some point. The recommendations, further recommendations for changes to the proposed bamboo ordinance. Ben Johnson has submitted proposed changes and we reviewed them, most pretty much agreeing that they were desirable changes. So hopefully this will be taken into account at such time as the council proceeds with that. Nine Pine Drive, I'm glad to see that that they proceeded with the mowing the lawn and putting a lien in there. Of course, that property has a far more problems than just the lawn. So hopefully code enforcement will take a look at it and decide what other steps can be done.
We've been working on that, Mike, for many months. So I think there's a court date.
Good. Thank you. Good to know that. Thank you. And let's see, the bike lane, I just remember that came up a few years ago. And remember, Menda was advocating it, and what part of the problem was that the proposal was to cut down a whole row of trees on Rochdale Avenue to make space for a bicycle, which just didn't strike to make terribly much sense because there's hardly a problem of bicycles being unable to get through the traffic in downtown Roosevelt. So, and the problem is more outside of the built-up area of Roosevelt is an area where this the traffic, the speed is low and bicycles presumably have no difficulty getting through, and when you get outside of North Vasca Drive and on Clarksburg Road, it probably is a bit more of a problem because that you don't have the wide, you don't have the bike lanes there, and that's where if you need bike lanes anywhere, that's where you need them, but not inside Roosevelt. And that whole issue with the council, with the communication with council members, just bear in mind that there's a dual function here. There's an the council members have an administrative function as well as the councilmanic function. It's in the administrative function, the mayor is the head of the administration. So the mayor should certainly be able to communicate with anybody who's involved in any particular area of activity as an administrative function rather than as a council function. And just bear that distinction in mind. Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Mike, bear that distinction, but there still can't be four of us discussing something, right?
That's correct. But as I say, since you're dealing with individuals who are in effect the ministers of certain areas, Minister of Public Works, the Minister of Finance, you as the mayor, as the head of the government, have the right to talk with any of those people as needed. That's what I'm saying.
Well, who am I authorized to talk to as needed?
Well,
everybody.
Well, anyone on your anybody, if you have right. A committee, I would say if you have a committee, you have a three-member committee, you know, you can certainly talk to the people, the three members committee. You can't talk to the mayor and the other two members of the committee at the same time because that would violate the Open Public Meetings Act. But you could certainly, if you're the head of Public Works and you have two other people who are supposed to be assisting you in Public Works, you should be able to communicate with them, I would think.
Yes.
Three you can, four you can.
Right, just four. You just can't have four on the thread. But there's a lot. If you leave the administrative function and the councilmanic function as distinct, maybe that helps make it clearer. Mm-hmm. That's all. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Anything else from the public? Thank you, Mike. Anything else from the public? Yeah, close public portion at 8:30 p.m.
Before we end the meeting, I just wanted to say that I was very impressed with all of the council members and how we actually, maybe we were not coordinated, but we actually were all out there. I mean, I saw Steve out on the street and Joe out on the street. And I mean, we were all out there trying to do whatever we could. And when we thought something needed to be done, we went and we did it. And we knocked on people's doors and brought generators to places where we thought it was needed and tried to help out everywhere. And so I was impressed with the level of activity. I mean, with all of us and our involvement in the town, and I thought it was impressive, and it was good.
I don't want to
be on the horn, but we're still pretty good job winging it.
I went out in the morning to Wawa to fill up gas cans to bring to the generator that we arranged for at Solar Village, because someone knocked on Mike Hamilton's door at 12:30 in the morning saying the generator had stopped. Everyone knows I'm up very late. Someone, Mike texted me. I texted a friend. We checked out the generator. It was out of gas. We went to Walla. This is 2:00 in the morning. Filled up 3 big gas cans full of gasoline. Came back, filled up the generator. And I sat outside. It was warm, but I sat outside at Solar Village until 5:00 in the morning, making sure that it wasn't going to stop again. It was going to keep running. I mean, I think we all really did our part and the best we could, especially when you factor in that there was no central operations center because of the Borough Hall being closed. There is a virus. We couldn't get together and talk. So I think that we did the best we could. And honestly, from the public, I've heard very few complaints. Most of the complaints I've heard are about JCP&L not getting the power on fast enough. But I received almost no complaints from residents discussing, you know, anything they were unhappy about. So I'm not belittling any of your concerns, Steve, but I do think we handled it the best that we could.
Part of the problem is texting. Texting is not very, I don't know, there could be a lot of miscommunications with texting. I've experienced a lot
over the phone as well. I mean,
yeah.
See a little bit of misunderstanding, but repeated misunderstanding, no.
Yeah, I agree.
Something wrong.
You know, yeah, but I think we need to address it in a formal way.
The woman that called, that went to your mic, that rang your bell at 12:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
Was really out of order. It was not the borough's concern.
That's right.
Not only that, but let me tell you something. The village is a private organization. The responsibility for anything happening there belongs to the board and to the people who take care of the place.
I'm sure the residents realize that.
It happens to be Lutheran Ministry. The weather was not such that they weren't freezing. It was warm. But as a matter of fact, to tell you the truth, the weather was not that bad. Two out of the 5 nights, the air conditioning was not even an issue. Let me tell you.
The
woman had no right to do this.
I'm not sure the residents understand that.
And I assure you, if I can help, but it'll never happen again. We are responsible for taking care of our business. And that's right.
It should have gone to me or to you, Lou.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm not sure the residents realize that. I think they know they're in Roosevelt, so they came to the governing body.
Let me tell you something. This is age restricted, but it's not a nursing home. This is a private place. Let me tell you, from personal reason, Irma and I were sitting in talk when we heard that this whole bloody mess with the Solar Village. You know, Irma and I are the second and third oldest people in Roosevelt right now, living in Roosevelt. And nobody until the fifth day when Joe shows up at the door. Nobody showed up at our house to find out if we're still alive.
No, Anna, I knew you were alive because Anna was talking to you.
Anna, of course, couldn't have talked to me because...
You didn't have anything?
Anna talked to me after, but I had no telephone. I had no communication whatsoever with anyone. My cell phone was out because AT&T's generator went out. Fios went out, and nobody... And there it is. I had no phone service whatsoever.
Okay. Do I have a motion?
No. I'm not feeling sorry for the people in the Solar Village, and we shouldn't feel sorry. They live in Roosevelt. That's it. They'll have to live with what happens in Roosevelt.
Well, I did worry, Lou, that they may have medicine that needed to be refrigerated, which is why
I have medicine that had to be refrigerated, and it went down the tube. Yeah. It happened to be injectable, so it's in the tube.
Yes. Well, I wanted to try to end on a positive note by saying that everybody worked hard, even though it was
indeed so.
That even I, though it was all screwed up, we somehow managed to pitch in as best as we could. But I think we need to learn from it.
Absolutely,
indeed.
Yeah. Before you do, again, I would urge. I mean it seriously. I would urge us to. Put some kind of in an ordinance or in a directive or whatever you want to call it, who's responsibility where when it comes to trees falling or properties or the streets are hindered.
I agree.
I think it's a matter of general law already, because I remember I had an experience where a tree of mine fell on a neighbor's property. He asked me to contact my insurance. My insurance's response was that he should contact his insurance. And there's enough other places that as long as it's not, you know, if you're a property owner and someone else has warned you that's a dangerous tree and please do something about it, it's going to fall on my property, and you do nothing about it, and then it falls on your property, you know, then they have a case against you because you failed to exercise due care. But in ordinary circumstances, where a tree just happens to fall, the property owner, wherever it falls, and that you don't need an ordinance to say that. That's already the law.
You're correct, Mike.
If the tree is in the street, who takes it off the street?
You know? It's the municipalities. Let me just finish it off like this. It's well settled law that if a tree falls on another person's property, the person whose property the tree falls on is responsible for the tree removal.
Right.
If a tree falls down in a roadway, in a right of way, the municipality is responsible for the removal of that tree.
Agreed. Okay.
That's all you need to know.
That's it.
My neighbor.
And if it's on Rushdale Avenue, the county's responsible.
Right.
Exactly.
Listen, yep. My neighbor has had a tree. It's on Green Acres. But he was afraid it was going to fall onto his property. And on his pool, and he had a grandchild that was visiting for a long time. And he was afraid, concerned. And he eventually paid $1,000. To have that tree removed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on Green Acres, but he knew it was going to fall. It was going to fall on his property. So he took care of it.
Okay.
It was deemed to be a dead tree, by the way.
Okay. Was it dead or mostly dead?
What?
Only kidding.
No.
It was an inside joke.
Yeah.
Motion to adjourn.
I'll make that motion. Second.
All right. Dad, and I think it was Lou was first. We'll see everyone by Zoom on September 14th. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Thank you. 39. See you on the 14th. Have a day.
Okay. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
See you tomorrow, Lou.
Yes.